By the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally on KU Band Radio at Telstar 5, 7 days a week on Truth Radio Network, and in more than 70 countries worldwide on the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law news and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the modern corporate fascist welfare state. Right after this message. You know, once in a while we get a glimpse of the real world through the eyes of an insider. An insider like John Swinton, for instance. He was the former editor of the New York Tribune when he said to the New York Press Association on February the 26th, 1936, he said that, quote, "There's no such thing as a free and independent press in America, unless it's in some country town, and there's not one of you who dares express an honest opinion because you know beforehand it would never appear in print." Now, I'm paid $150 a week for keeping my honest opinions out of the paper that I'm connected with, and others of you are paid for doing similar things. Now, if I should permit my honest opinions to be printed in one issue of my paper, like Othello, before 24 hours my occupation would be gone. Our business, he said, is to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, to fawn at the feet of mammon, and to sell his race and his country for his daily bread. We are the tools of rich men behind the scenes. We are intellectual prostitutes. Unquote. Well, these rich men behind the scenes are the movers and shakers of the Global 2000 program and the New World Order. Men and families like the Windsors, the Rockefellers, Bushes, Bundys, Carnegies, Vanderbilts. I say it's time that we wise up and start listening more to the God of Abraham and stop following after all of these crazy scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians. And let's prepare to live through and survive this New World Order and Global 2000 insanity. To learn more about Global 2000 and Bible prophecy and this New World Order, why don't you call and order my free 4-hour compact disc package. It's educational, entertaining, informative. Best of all, it's free of charge. You can call right now to order yours. The number 417-273-4967. If you're online, go to the website. It's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine and send me an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. Well, right now it's 4th of July time. The history of the modern corporate state has become a history of repeated injuries and oppressions, all directed toward establishing the impersonal corporation or corporate state as the dominant institution within our society. Seeking to reduce our Bill of Rights to little more than empty promises, the corporate state has carefully schemed to ensure that the expansion of its privileges and power will become the dominating and prevailing force within our society's economic, social, and political institutions. To prove this, let the facts be submitted to a candid world. Yet, the corporate welfare state has privatized this nation's natural resources, our land, water, air, food, and fiber, while controlling, monetizing, and exploiting those same resources for its own corporate monetary gain. The corporate welfare state has, through its economic and political power, repeatedly influenced government policy and legal institutions to support private enterprise development through promoting and defending corporate property rights at the expense of social and environmental concerns, eschewing control of private lands even for the purposes of conservation, while being provided abundant government subsidies towards its profitable pursuits of monopolizing coal, timber, oil, and agriculture. This corporate welfare state has, through a process of substituting capital for efficiency, technology for labor, and creating an assembly line system of processing our food, has now turned our farmers into technological junkies, endangering their own and their families' health and safety, converting stewards of the land into miners of the land, creating an elite class of corporate welfare cheats living off of taxpayer dollars and basing family farm survival not on earned farm income, but rather upon borrowed capital and rural development. The corporate welfare state has throughout the 20th century driven farmers, workers, and consumers apart by diverting taxpayers' attention away from the root causes of our nation's chronically depressed farm economy while preaching about inefficient farm practices, excessive government regulations, and by replacing a fair price in the marketplace with an unfair and an ever-escalating burden of debt. This corporate welfare state has, in romanticizing family farming as a profession and denigrating the farmer as an individual, has now successfully removed the culture from agriculture while striving to achieve its ultimate goal, and that is the globalized industrialization of our food supply. This corporate welfare state has not only denied farmers a fair price for what they produce, but they have deprived the men, women, and children that they hire the right to organize and bargain collectively, in addition to blocking service and factory workers from receiving a fair and a just minimum wage. Our corporate welfare state has, in the name of greater productivity, cost management, and efficiency, callously endangered the health, safety, and livelihoods of thousands of its workers, while its executives and managers have remunerated themselves well beyond reasonable and equitable standards. Our corporate welfare state has motivated, by its own narrowly defined selfish financial interests, pitted workers against workers, race against race, natural-born citizens against immigrants, cultures against cultures, men against women, young against old, and class against class. This corporate welfare state has remained indolent to the massive decay of our rural communities and inner-city ghettos, denying the human dignity of the millions of men, women, and children who have played such a vital and historic role in fashioning our nation's bountiful food delivery and manufacturing system. Our corporate welfare state has demeaned the honest labor of its citizens with burgeoning credit, huge debt loads, and a multi-billion dollar national deficit and national debt. This corporate welfare state has systematically increased the separation of real asset ownership from the real asset control by controlling the resources of public lands, the airwaves, and the investment policies of public monies through its banks and insurance companies. Our corporate welfare state has repeatedly exhibited its inability to soundly invest, wisely manage, or safely care for the monies of workers and consumers, while at the same time imploring the public to bear its risks, its own failures, including its waste and corrupt practices. This corporate welfare state has sufficiently neutralized government regulators to such a degree that those government, state, and local agencies and bureaus designed originally to promote a consumer-sovereign economy have instead adopted priorities more attuned to a seller-sovereign economy, governed, of course, by the corporations. This corporate welfare state has, through a concerted process and a contorted process, has aided by a massive and submissive and compliant judiciary, managed to protect its interests by cloaking itself as a person within the language of the 14th Amendment, exercising all of its privileges while bearing few, if any, of the responsibilities that such a constitutional designation grants. Our corporate welfare state has established economic growth by means of corporate priorities, whereby corporate elites and banking elites, not simply having a disproportionate amount of power and influence, but at the same time, such power and influence rarely being part of a public discussion, such that the public can question it and interrogate it in any concrete way. Our corporate welfare state has, through bribery, political action campaign money, and honoraria, all designed to unduly influence our legislators into betraying the true interests of their constituents to the degree that we now have well-nigh one ruling political party beholden to the same corporate paymasters. And our corporate welfare state has, by buying corporatist political leaders, individuals not necessarily conservative in nature, but rather ones programmed to deliver what the elitist element in the corporate state desires, created a government where politics creates our national, domestic, and foreign policy, rather than one where policy is an outgrowth of political democracy. This corporate welfare state has successfully coerced politicians, in the name of corporate socialism, into establishing a huge corporate welfare system composed of hundreds of millions of dollars in tax abatements, tax preferences, grants, inflated contracts, bailouts, and a never-ending number of miscellaneous subsidies to industry and corporate agribusiness. Our corporate welfare state has obstructed the administration of equal justice under the law by injunctions procured from overawed, overburdened courts, legal technicalities, endless numbers of appeals from one politically appointed judge to another, with the overall intent of overburdening prosecutors and defense lawyers, opening and openly avowing its determination to make it so time-consuming, so expensive, and so complicated for the public to prosecute that they dare not undertake any such effort. This corporate welfare state has created a mammoth, extravagant, and wasteful military-industrial congressional complex, which has become not only one of dubious value in protecting our citizenry from terrorism, but endangers our future national security by depriving the nation of necessary funding for important domestic programs and infrastructural needs such as universal health care and a challenging public education system, essential to our survival as a nation. Our corporate welfare state has misled its own people into believing that our nation has both the right to be an imperial power in a multicultural, multi-religious world, but that we also have a moral obligation to initiate, to instigate, and to wage foreign wars while thousands of parasites, the gamblers in the necessities of life, use such wars and the threat of such wars for the purpose of exacting exorbitant profits, working not to beat an enemy, but to create more billionaires. We have not been wanting in our attempts to obtain redress through the People's Congress. Our repeated efforts have been answered only by silence, indifference, or attempts to frame laws that appear to meet our wants and needs, but are in reality only become a legal snare for our courts to disagree upon and for our corporations to ignore or disobey. We the people have repeatedly warned our political leaders of the various and repeated violations of our rights and that are being perpetuated against us. We have reminded them of the reasons for and the circumstances surrounding our immigration and settlement in this land in the beginning, and we have appealed to them as administrators of a free and impartial government to protect us from these encroachments, which, if continued, assuredly will inevitably end in the total destruction of those liberties for which our families gave their lives, inevitably resulting in the establishment of an entrenched privileged class and an aristocracy of wealth in this nation. We must therefore acquiesce to the necessity which compels us to denounce this corporate state moral and criminal indifference to its wrongs, and to hold them as we would many of our leaders and legislatures, an enemy to the farmer, an enemy to the worker, an enemy to the consumer, to the monopolist, and to the plutocrat, he is a friend. We therefore, the citizenry of our republic, assembled and conscious of our populist tradition, appealing to the supreme judge of the world, the God of creation, for the rectitude of our intentions, do solemnly declare that we will use all lawful and peaceable means to free ourselves from this tyranny of the corporate welfare state and its monopolistic ideology. And we will never cease in our efforts for economic and social justice until every branch of our government gives signification that the reign of greed and corporate subservience is over, and that the degree of economic and political democracy envisioned by the framers of our government sought to inaugurate has become a reality in fact. That comes from Albert Krebs. Krebs publishes a newsletter. I'll give you an address here. It's called The Calamity Howler. Calamity Howler. You can receive it free. Just go to the publisher, A.V. Krebs. At avkrebs@earthlinks.net. Again, that's A-V-K-R-E-B-S, A-V Krebs, at earthlink.net. Just send your name and address. He also puts out the Agribusiness Examiner. I would suggest a donation. I'd say $10 or $20 a month. He puts it out every week, so it comes out four times a month, 52 times a year. I'd say $5 a week. Let me see what that works out to be. If you had 52 weeks times $5, it'd be $260 a year. If you're poor and can't afford $260, once you cut it in half, I'm sure that $130 would be a step in the right direction. I'm just suggesting, I believe it's worth easy $5 a week. I subscribe to a number of newsletters, and so when we talk about facts, devolved from or distinguished from fiction, I think A.V. Krebs is right on top of it. It's called The Calamity Howler and the Agribusiness Examiner. While we're on the subject here of the big corporations, you got two or three other articles in here I thought I'd share with you. One of them is entitled Thomas Jefferson on Corporations. Jefferson on Corporations. He said, "This is no strange doctrine for American ears. Jefferson knew that nations are not immortal, that governments are transient, that concentrated wealth and widespread poverty cannot forever endure side by side in a democracy. Madison was equally well acquainted with the long story of mankind, and he also warned his countrymen of perils to come." So Madison said this, quote, in the Constitutional Convention of 7 August of 1787, here's what he said, quote, "In future times, a great majority of people will not only be without landed, but any other sort of property." Now, Americans today have been totally divorced from property since 1933 with the establishment of House Joint Resolution 192 and the abolition of gold in our monetary system. That was the date, March 5th, 1933. That's the date that the first plank to the Communist Manifesto was put into practice here in the United States. Now, we Americans practice all 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. We give lip service to our Bill of Rights. We have banned the Ten Commandments now from our public schools, and indeed from our national consciousness. We've replaced it with humanism, and we've replaced our political institutions with a fascist regime of corporate monopoly. Archer, Daniels, Midland, and ConAgra. Microsoft, General Motors, and Ford have now taken the place of Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife as the property owners of America. Now, clear back in 1936, this isn't something new here, but clear back in 1936, the modern corporation and private property, Nearly 80% of the business wealth of the nation is concentrated in the hands of corporations, and about 49% of the corporate wealth and 38% of the business wealth is in the hands of 200 corporations in a nation of 120 million natural persons. Now, let me show you where the concentration of economic wealth was in 1936. Most of you listening to me right now weren't even around in 1936. This is during the Roosevelt administration. This is the beginning of communism in America. 1933, we began with House Joint Resolution 192. I mean, we really got serious. We dabbled in communism after the Civil War. From about 1865 to 1933, we were dabblers in communism. When we got up to 1933, we got very serious about it. We started legislating it. We put it into our national, political, and our legal agenda. Now listen again. 1936, 200 corporations in America. Now, this is less than the Fortune 500 of today. 1936, 80% of the business wealth of the nation is concentrated in the hands of corporations. So in 1936, only 20% of the wealth of the nation was in the hands of its citizens. 80% was in the hands of corporations. Going on, about 49%. Now let's just round that off to 50. That's about 50% of the corporate wealth, and 38%. That's about 40% of the business wealth is in the hands of 200 corporations. Half of the corporate wealth and 40% of all the business wealth is in the hands of 200 corporations in 1936. Let me ask you this. In the year 2004, do you think that the numbers are greater than that or less? If you want to test it, just drive down the strip in your city. And you look off to one side, off to the right, and you'll see Get and Go. That's a corporation. You look off to the left, and you'll see a Standard Oil or an Exxon service station. You'll see Kentucky Fried Chicken. You'll see Arby's and McDonald's. And as you drive down the strip in your town, just look off to all of those businesses and ask yourself, how many of these businesses are owned by individual families? And how many are owned by corporations? The Gordon Law School is a family-owned enterprise. It's a private business. I live in a little county called Ozark County, Missouri, and I'll just bet you that in this county, I am the only private business in this county. Now, there's a lot of guys around here that have farms. You know, my neighbor Everett over here, he's a farmer. But he doesn't practice private business. He has a checking account and a social security number, and that social security number puts him into public business. And he's treated just like a corporation. He's regulated by the Department of Agriculture and OSHA, the EPA, the State Tax Commission, the IRS. Indeed, all of the people that I know of in my county have social security numbers or taxpayer identification numbers, and they're all regulated and controlled by the Department of Labor, the Department of Agriculture, the State Department, or somebody. There are no common law free men, to my knowledge, in Ozark County, save for the Gordon family. And if they are, then they're pretty well hidden. I'm pretty open and notorious about my practices, but most people, in this county at least, are not. So I just wanted you to note that the concept of private business versus the corporate welfare, the corporate fascist welfare state, is so well established in America today that you couldn't tell us from the Soviet Union. In fact, if you take a look at the Cold War and the ideological struggle between capitalism and communism, think about this now. You lived through it. And ask yourself, of our Bill of Rights, of principles of law and government, how many of those principles of law and government have been adopted by, let's say, China, Russia, Poland, Czechoslovakia, Cuba? Can you think of one principle of our system of government under our Constitution and Bill of Rights that we, the white guys in white hats, the capitalists, the good guys, have sold to the communists and the dictators, the totalitarians of the world? And then ask yourself this, of the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, in other words, there were 10 of our Bill of Rights and there were the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto at the outset of this contest or this competition between capitalism and communism. And then ask yourself, how many of those principles of the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto have we Americans, Canadians, Australians, and New Zealanders adopted? You know, like the first plank to the Communist Manifesto calls for the abolition of all rights to property in land. Have you noticed that you've got a property tax on your house? That you don't own that house, you have an equitable interest in it, subject to that property tax every year, subject to the mortgage to that corporate bank or savings and loan, don't you? And the second plank to the manifesto, which calls for a heavy progressive income tax, or the fifth plank, which calls for a central bank, or the eighth plank, which calls for an industrial army, We call that Social Security here in America, or the 10th plank, which calls for free education for all children in public schools. Now ask yourself, have we adopted these 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, and can you point to one doctrine of our Bill of Rights that have been adopted by any other country in the world? Mull that one over, because the answer is no, sir. Not a single principle of our Constitution or Bill of Rights has been adopted by any nation in the world, including Iraq at this moment in time. But we Americans have adopted all 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, and we are imposing that upon the Iraqis, and we are exporting that around the world. That's the exact and diametric opposite to the 10 commandments. Our Bill of Rights and our Constitution was written by men who believed in and practiced the 10 commandments of God, the 10 commandments that Moses brought down off of Mount Sinai. We used to teach those in our public schools. We used to teach those in our churches. We don't any longer. Today in our churches, we teach religion. We teach ideology. We don't teach law. America's changed a great deal, wouldn't you say, over the past 50 years? Hang on. Let me bring you this message, and we'll be right back with more on the modern corporate fascist welfare state when we return. You're listening to the Editorial Review and Law Hour, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. You know, this genocidal policy of Global 2000 and the New World Order are the greatest threats to our lives, our liberties, and our property since Noah's flood. And that's not just my opinion. You know, Jesus of Nazareth held that same view when he said in Matthew 24, verse 22, here's his quotation. He said, quote, "Except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved alive." Now, you know, there are 64 of these life-threatening problems described in the scripture detailing this New World Order and their Global 2000 genocidal plan. The scripture teaches preparation for this great tribulation, not apathy and indifference. And that's why I contend that it's time that you and I wise up and start listening more to our God, the God of Israel, the God of Abraham, and stop following after all these crazy scientists and philosophers and preachers and politicians. You know, the Ted Kennedys and Arlen Specters and the Hillary Clintons. And to do just that, why don't you call and write, or write, for my free general law CD package. Now, that's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge. The number to call, 417-273-4967. And my subsistence and survival school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to the website, georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine and send me an email request for your free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. You'll do that right now before you forget. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or you can call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the modern corporate fascist welfare state. And you know, as we go out to celebrate our freedom on this 4th of July, why don't we go over our checklist? We need to go over a few things to make our celebration a total success. Before leaving home, you should make sure that you check the color-coded Homeland Security alert status and be especially careful if it's orange or red. Don't worry about yellow. It's always yellow. Be concerned when it's orange or red. And be aware of your surroundings at all times. New Yorkers in particular, watch out for those pesky mushroom clouds. And don't use any illegal fireworks in your 4th of July celebration. It's for your own safety. And the Founding Fathers implemented a government to protect you from yourselves, didn't they? Besides, fireworks are explosive devices, and you might be considered a terrorist with weapons of mass destruction. And although the government can't find any of these weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, you can rest assured that they will find them in your car trunk if you have any fireworks there. But don't worry, getting arrested, imprisoned indefinitely without formal charges and a five-year wait before the secret tribunal trial, as per the Patriot Act, is a breeze. It's that secret summary execution that should make you nervous. And make sure that you're buckled up in your seatbelts, would you? There will be roadblocks and checkpoints to make sure that you comply. Remember, it's for the safety of you and your children. We're doing this for your protection. And if you're on an airline, or if you're an airline employee, why don't you lighten up for the holiday? You can always look for a job tomorrow. Maybe you could transfer over to the Federal Airport Security Screener job. Big demand for those jobs. You don't have to be very smart either. So when the airlines go broke, why don't you just get a job with the airline security force? Now, if you're a Halliburton employee, then you should celebrate. You probably have a raise coming from your Iraqi contract windfall. If you're celebrating on any public property, make no mention of religious ideals. Government is God there, and you will be apprehended. And make sure that you always have your papers ready as you approach the holiday police checkpoints. Have your papers ready. Don't criticize the president or other government officials either. You might be in violation of the Patriot Act and considered a possible terrorist. Political dissent should be avoided at all costs. And don't mention our Constitution either. Don't mention our Constitution in any district court, or you could be held in contempt. And if your children get out of line this holiday, don't discipline them either. because they may be kidnapped by the Department of Social Services and held hostage until you receive some approved psychological therapy and are then deemed acceptable to the corporate welfare state. You need to show compassion on this Independence Day by bringing an illegal immigrant to your celebration or by hugging a tree. If an election is occurring in your locality within the next 90 days, do not talk about or publicly support any candidate, as that is no longer lawful. Keep your mouth shut. If an officer asks to search your vehicle at the seatbelt checkpoints, do not be belligerent and demand a search warrant. Standing up for your Fourth Amendment rights is antisocial, and it is no longer in tune with the new American way of life. Are you with Al-Qaeda or something? And don't get upset when the searching officer will not help you pick up all of your belongings that he has thrown all over the highway as he searched your vehicle. After all, you need to understand that it is not in his job description, and complaining will not get you anywhere except maybe charged with obstructing and delaying an officer in the performance of his duty. And keep your guns at home, too. You're not going hunting. And besides, what on earth do guns have to do with American independence anyway? Better yet, turn your guns into the authorities and let them know that you're a true patriotic American and that you're totally unarmed. Better yet, just stay at home. But do not assume that you're safe because you've stayed at home. You see, if a government bureaucrat shows up at your home, he'll probably be flashing a badge at you. This makes him look like a constitutional law enforcement officer. He may even be armed. Do not ask to see a warrant, and don't ask or tell him to leave if he does not have one. They will put a siege around your house. If you do not come out soon enough, they will invade with guns drawn with a SWAT team or even set your house on fire. For more information, just do a search using the keywords like Symbionese Liberation Army, Philadelphia Move Group, Gordon Call, The Order, Robert Matthews, Covenant of the Sword and Arm of the Lord, Randy Weaver, Branch Davidian, or Elian Gonzalez. If you're counting on your congressman to protect you, understand that the average congressman is also afraid to resist. For more information, just do a word search using keywords like George Hansen, James Trafficant, or Larry McDonald. If you're celebrating at the mall in Washington, D.C., you're probably safe as the mall is now monitored by hundreds of surveillance cameras. It's for your protection. And these security surveillance cameras, you're being watched by federal security forces. Don't do anything that you wouldn't want them to see. And bring lots of cash with you, because there's going to be many taxes, fines, and fees to pay as you celebrate your freedoms this day. And don't leave home without your driver's license, social security card, birth certificate, welfare card, Medicare card, medical records, W-2 form, and two other forms of ID, preferably with your picture on them, like a driver's license and a passport. You may be asked for these documents or papers at any police checkpoint. Better yet, you could get microchipped, and you could avoid all of this hassle of carrying around your papers by simply carrying around the mark of the beast. You should also bring your library card, because the FBI may want to ask you about it. And don't put any anti-government bumper stickers on your car either, especially not anything about the right to keep and bear arms. It's politically incorrect. Police have now been trained by the FBI in bumper sticker profiling. This attracts their attention at the checkpoints, and it makes you look like a terrorist. And with regard to bumper sticker profiling, you should be especially aware of the fact that they will get my gun when they pry it from my cold, dead fingers. It is no longer mere semantics. It's politically incorrect. And you'll see that at Waco and Ruby Ridge. We learned that they will kill you and then take your gun from your cold, dead fingers. You also need to be careful not to have any unauthorized thoughts. And after all, these are called thought crimes. There are now serious penalties for thought crime. You should be aware that civil forfeiture laws make it possible to take anything that you own by alleging that it was intended to be used for the commission of a crime. This could include transporting or storing a gun. If civil forfeiture, also known as admiralty prize actions, if these kinds of proceedings are initiated against you, then you will have the burden of proof to show that your thoughts were in compliance with government standards. If you're traveling by air this Independence Day, do not give the airport screeners a hard time. That's because they're feeling you up and molesting your daughter and your wife for the security of America. And besides that, if you complain, you could be arrested. You don't support bin Laden, do you? Then don't complain when your wife and daughter are being felled up. You need to keep an eye on your fellow Americans as you celebrate this 4th of July. If you see anything suspicious, you should take notes about that person so that when you get home, you can then call and report these people to Homeland Security. And remember, you're not a nosy snitch. You are a great American patriot. And don't mention the signers of the Declaration of Independence this 4th of July either. Mentioning these white subversive terrorists is not popular, and it could get you into big trouble. Besides, what do these guys, at the signing of the Declaration of Independence, or of our Constitution and Bill of Rights, have to do with the 4th of July anyway? This is a party day. And don't leave home without one or more little plastic American flags made by political slaves in communist China. After all, they need the 14 cents an hour that they earn making these flags for you. Make sure that you have one of these flags flying from the antenna of your car so that you don't seem to be un-American. I mean, after all, you don't want to be un-American, do you? And don't take a copy of the Declaration of Independence with you, because it advocates the overthrow of a tyrannical government. It's a terrorist document from beginning to end, and it'll be confiscated at the holiday police checkpoints. Same advice for the Constitution. These are subversive documents. And remember, as you leave home for the 4th of July outing, that you second, or that the second, rather, you stepped out of the door, that you probably broke hundreds of federal, state, and local laws. There are 2.5 million of them. Surely you must have broken some, and you're probably totally unaware of that. However, if you toe the line, no one is going to charge you with the violation of these crimes. And don't even think about taxes on this great day, the 4th of July. The 50% government confiscation of your income at the threat of imprisonment or at the point of a gun shouldn't even cross your mind as you revel in your freedom. After all, April 15th is a long way off. Let's celebrate the 4th and forget about April 15th. And whatever you do, do not let on that you really know that true freedom died a long time ago in America. Just have fun for the day and then go home and stick your head back in the sand and pretend America is not becoming a socialist welfare police state. Now go out there and celebrate your freedom. Go out and celebrate your liberty and have a great sanitized, politically correct, and government-approved and authorized Independence Day. If you have a few decades with nothing better to do, why don't you study up on administrative law? Laws are now made by the unelected bureaucrats in these hundreds of administrative agencies. If you're charged with violating one of these laws, you'll not get a trial by a jury of your peers, and you'll be tried by the agency that made the charge. It's the new American way. I hope this message gets past the Department of Homeland Security approved internet filter. How else can they protect us from unauthorized thought? Now go out and celebrate your independence and have a great 4th of July. Thought that'd kind of make your day, wouldn't it? Now there's a little more here that deals with this thing of free trade. Let me take a break here and we'll come right back and tell you about free trade. Only a deafening silence to a long voice. I still love farming, but there's no way to make a living at it. Well, you know, back in 1970, the world food supply was 73 days for every man, woman, and child in the world. Today, it's down to 38 days. Did you know that? 38 days. We produce grain for export, and then our grapes are imported from Chile, tomatoes from Mexico, berries from Guatemala. Our food supply, boys and girls, is in the hands of foreigners and multinational corporations who support this global 2000 population reduction program. Well, this globalization may be good for business, but globalization is bad for you, and it's bad for me. You see, back in 1940, all of us here in America had a pantry full of food to feed our families for a full year. Today, we now have a three-day supply in our refrigerators, and we believe passionately in our supermarket system of just-in-time delivery to feed us all. So over the past 60 years, we've traded a one-year food supply for about 3 days. Do you think that's very wise? You see, these global 2000 mad scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians, as I call them, they plan to use famine, plague, disease, and pestilence to reduce Earth's population by 90% over the next 50 years. I got that directly from the Club of Rome, one of the policy think tanks of the New World Order. And I have observed that these evil madmen with their global 2000 genocide agenda have a cause that they're willing to die for. And I say, let them die for their cause. And unless you and I live for ours. And let me show you from the scripture how to be a live survivor instead of a dead victim. If you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? That's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge. And you can call right now to order yours. The number is 417-273-4967, and my subsistence and survival school is available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to the website. It's georgegordon.org. Click on the email machine and send me an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, I got a couple of minutes here. Listen to this little story. Only a deafening silence to a lone voice. A farmer says, I still love farming, but there's no way to make a living at it. Well, last week, with the nation's terrorism alert light flashing code orange and the United States and its coalition of the coerced in the initial stages of a war against its evil axis of evil, a lone North Carolina tobacco farmer accomplished what Osama bin Laden and Saddam Hussein has failed to do. He managed to tie up the center of the free world for nearly 72 hours. Sitting on his John Deere tractor in the Constitutional Gardens pool between the Washington Monument and Lincoln Memorial, with an American flag flying upside down, a recognized signal of distress, Dwight W. Watson, age 50, of Whitakers, North Carolina, sought in his own way to say to the American public, "I still love farming, but there's no way to make a living in it." The media made much of the fact that his protest was centered around a cut in his tobacco subsidy. Subsidy, now becoming a media buzzword for farmers being on the government's welfare dole. Yet at the heart of Watson's protest was the unfair and unjust below cost of production prices that family farmers are being paid today, whether that be in tobacco, grain, meat, poultry, fruits, vegetables, and so on. But probably what was most alarming about the reaction to Watson's protest was not simply the expected media ignorance and public and official Washington reaction to his action, as one can see in reading articles from the Washington Post or the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal, but the total silence. I mean, a wall of silence. And any kind of emphatic support from Watson's fellow family members or farmers nationwide. Now, at a time in our nation's history when apathy and silence have no place in our public discourse, the farm community cannot afford to expect public sympathy for their plight unless they and the leaders of their organizations are willing to come forth and exercise some profiles in courage. Their sectional and their intra-commodity lamentations ring hollow if they fail to publicly recognize how their plight interconnects with non-farm issues that plague our nation as it seeks to become an imperial power in the hands of a nigh-corporate fascist regime. Farmers in America have always been known for their blunt and no-nonsense talk, as Watson himself exhibited during his siege of the nation's capital, so they should have no trouble identifying themselves with filmmaker Michael Moore's exemplary and courageous acceptance speech upon receiving an Academy Award for his documentary Bowling for Columbine. On behalf of our producers, Kathleen Glenn and Michael Donovan from Canada, I'd like to thank the Academy for this. I have invited my fellow documentary nominees on the stage with us, and we would like, and I'd like to thank the Academy for this, and we'd like to they're here, thank them that they're here in solidarity with me, because we like nonfiction. This is Michael Moore now. We like nonfiction, and we live in fictitious times. We live in the time where we have fictitious election results that elects a fictitious president. We live in a time where we have a man sending us to war for fictitious reasons. Whether it's the fiction of duct tape or fiction of orange alerts, we are against this war. Mr. Bush, shame on you. Mr. Bush, shame on you. And anytime you've got the Pope and the Dixie Chicks against you, your time is up. Thank you very much. Michael Moore. Moore could well have included in his remarks that the U.S. is also fighting a war to save a fictitious economy, a fictitious economy that family farmers have been shouldering for decades, while the people they feed have enjoyed an unmatched period of prosperity, which is now beginning to deteriorate all around them. It is an economy that has forced thousands of family farmers off of the land, an economy that is destroying rural America, and all of these principles of hard work, self-sufficiency, and family values that our political leaders are always so in love with, especially at election time. An economy that sees between 85 and 90% of a farm family's income coming from off the farm, while farm incomes themselves have been averaging between 1.5% and 2.5% a year average return on investment. An economy where four companies control 65 to 85% of the farmer's market for a wide variety of agricultural commodities. An economy which has turned farmers into technological junkies and often the object of scorn. The object of scorn by a self-satisfied public and uneducated friends. Let me pause for a moment and run that by you again. Here's our economy where 85 to 90% of a farm family's income comes from off the farm. Now stop and think about that. 85 to 90% of the money that the average farmer in America, the average family farmer, not the corporate farmer, you know, not the industrial farmers, not the industrial corporation farms that have 40,000 sows on a pig farm. You know, I'm talking about the individual family farmer, like the George Gordons. I'm a farmer. I can testify to this. I'll guarantee you that all of 85 or 90% of my income comes from off-farm sources. Now, I produce everything for my family and for our close friends, but I do have a little bit to sell. If I had to make a living here farming, I'd starve to death. I can't compete with industrial agriculture. Of course, I produce a profit, and I produce a product that is 10 times more valuable, but you can't get 10 times more money for it. So here are 1.9 million American farmers. There's fewer farmers now than there are people in our prisons. 2 million people in prisons and 1.9 million farmers in America. And we're importing now about 50% of everything that we eat in America is coming from Chile, Mexico, or Guatemala. It's coming from China. Your garlic industry has been exported to China. Your garlic now comes from China. It's cheaper to pay those Chinese 14 cents an hour than it is to pay minimum wage to a Mexican in the United States. course, I'm not quite sure where everybody's going to get the money to buy all of this stuff that comes in from overseas when we're all unemployed because our jobs have been outsourced to India or Pakistan or Bangladesh or someplace else. I'm not sure that anybody's thinking about this. I just thought I'd throw it out for your consideration. You take the average family farm income, 85 to 90% of it is coming from off-farm sources. Now, farm incomes themselves have been averaging between 1.5% and 2.5% a year average return on investment. So, you know, I can take a look at my farm here, and then I can take a look at my tractors and my fences and my livestock and everything that's here. And on average, nationwide, we get 1 to 2.5%, 1.5 to 2.5% a year return on that. That's not enough to make you want to rush out and invest a bunch of money now, is it? In more stock, more cows, more sheep, more tractors, more fences, now, does it? Now, we live in an economy where four companies control 65 to 85% of the farmer's market for a wide variety of agricultural commodities. You know, that's Archer Daniels, Midland, and ConAgra, Pillsbury, General Mills. Just a few of these multinational corporations control the marketplace, you know, like Tyson Foods. You know, here's what we're going to pay you for these cows. And all these big feedlots, you know, with thousands and thousands of cows in them. Well, those industrial feedlots feeding all those chemicals and pesticides and antibiotics to those cattle, which in turn give you all these diseases for which you buy all this insurance so that you can spend all this money in hospitals and doctors and on healthcare. It's a system that we've created. It comes from corporate monopoly. It comes from our modern corporate welfare state. It's a fascist corporate welfare state. Meanwhile, out of sight, out of mind, rural America continues to suffer a continual number of farm bankruptcies, foreclosures, and forced evictions, which have reaped their grim human harvest of suicides, alcoholism, divorce, family violence, personal stress, and loss of community. Now, this was at the heart of Dwight Watson's message, and one would have hoped that the opportunity that he provided the nation's besieged family farmers to make their case for economic and social justice would have resonated throughout rural America, and whether one agreed with Watson or not, the chance to speak truth to power would have been one that was loud and clear. Instead, it has been nothing more than a deafening silence. All right, so much for the corporate welfare state. All right, you've been listening to the editorial review and the Law Hour, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, for more information about the Gordon Law School and the Law Hour, please go to my website. That's georgegordon.org. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page on the website. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log, schedule of archives, and it can be accessed through my website at georgegordon.org. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Well, there's the signal. It says our time is up. We'll have to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, God willing, same time, same station. So until then, good night, friends.